The morning show on Trib Life Radio is brought to you by the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, recently highlighted as the face of financial guidance in Pittsburgh Magazine. The Trib Life Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a trip. Trip. Triple.
And Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz, right here on Trib Life Radio.
NFL playoff action about 30 hours away. Playoff coverage on Trib Live Radio brought to you by Goodrich & Geist, pursuing justice for real people, online at goodrichandgeist.com. And Lord knows it's big stakes because, yet again, Permane Sandwich is bet by the mayor, with the mayor of Cincinnati offering chili in return. God knows we need some Cincinnati chili in this town if the Steelers can come out with a win, guys. So this is huge. This is clearly putting it over the top. And Eaton Park Smiley Cookies on the line here, so I don't know what else you could throw on the line for.
At least with Baltimore, you get crab cakes. Who wants that crappy Skyline chili? I don't think is anything special at all. That's the best Cincinnati has to offer.
It's not even Skyline chili. It's Gold Star chili. I'm not even familiar with that.
Maybe it's better. Have you ever had Skyline?
I have. Well, you know, I've had the sauce or whatever. You know, just the
painfully the average. Average at best. What about the ribs from that place?
I don't know.
I don't think I ever had them.
Oh, yeah. Christ, it just jumped out of my head. We go there all the time whenever we would road trip down there to cover games. But there's a fantastic rib place. That should be the bet in exchange for the Permane sandwiches. But why do we even report on those silly bets if it's anything, unless it's something outside the norm? Okay, Permane's. Okay, a bottle of ketchup. You know, it's always the same old silly things that we bet on our end. You know, it's give me something.
Condiments from the Kraft Heinz Company. We're sending packets of ketchup if the Steelers win the game.
So yeah. I mean, if you can vary it up somehow and make it something a little bit more unique, I'm in. But that to me just doesn't resonate anymore.
Like a politician wearing the game jersey to Congress or something right. For a day. That's fun video.
Well, the one guy that had to sing Meet the Mets. Okay, that was – now we're talking.
Yeah, how about like Kevin sing Sticks or something if they lose the game? This mayor of Cincinnati.
He's going to sing Renegade. How about some Donny Iris?
We always had this promo running on Fox Sports, Beano saying, if Michigan goes up and beats Penn State in week 7, he said, I'll sing the Hail to the Victors on this show. And then we cut to Hail to the Concrete Heroes because they went up and beat them. It was funny.
How'd Beano do?
Actually, pretty well. Good. If it's a college fight song, he knew
it.
Yeah,
he knows it well. Well, as cliche as that bet is, I don't know about this game. Will it be as cliche as Steelers trips to Cincinnati have been? I think it's time for our Monday's headlines today. Predictions sure to go wrong. When we come in here Monday, guys, what will be the main topics? How will the game turn out? I'll start here, and I've got a feeling with all the jibber-jabber this week, and I don't know if it's subterfuge, Tim, but we had the guy on, Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com, and Ralph Paulk had a story in the Trib today talking to Bengals players. They're so stuffing this establish the run game down my throat. I'm starting to believe it. It's either that or it's a total red herring. But I think the Bengals are going to come out and they're going to be so cautious with A.J. McCarron. I see Pittsburgh taking a big lead early. Then Cincinnati comes to their senses. They realize Antoine Blake is Antoine Blake, and they start coming back. It turns into a scary finish, but I'm going Pittsburgh holding on 24-21 with a couple big plays early. Makes sense to you that the Bengals would be making a mistake if they come out and just try to run, pass on third and longs?
Yes, I do, and I slightly see it the other way. I think Steelers come back to win in the fourth quarter and win by a final of about 26-22. I mean, I see a similar game, but I see like the headline is AJ A to F. They start off good, and then they fade late. The Steelers catch up and come back to win.
If AJ starts good, that might, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he did play, people throw that out, he played big games at Alabama. That might not matter in the NFL. But I would imagine if he gets through the first quarter guy and he's calm and they have a lead.
All you have to do is look at how he's played since he came in the middle of the Steeler game. He hasn't thrown an interception, played very well against a good Denver defense. I think weather, you know, a little bit of rain's one thing. If it's 100%, if it rains the entire game, I think it's a disadvantage for the Steelers, who are a better passing team than they are and aren't going to have much of a running game. I'll make my official pick on Pick and Pork later, but I think I don't like either of your scenarios because I think the Steelers are going to lose.
Ooh.
And I have all week. It's a feeling. It's not anything I put, you know.
You're not alone. There's a lot of people that I know that cover that team on a daily basis that are I'll use the phrase delicately, notorious Steeler honks. Okay, not delicately.
But why don't you just say Labs and just throw it?
No, it wasn't Labs. Well, I don't know. I haven't really talked to Labs about it. But guys I know that always pick the Steelers, think the Steelers are going to win every week, have picked the Bengals.
Mm. Wow.
Ben Roethlisberger has to have a big game and almost a perfect game. No interceptions. The pressure is clearly on him. They have no running game. Their defense is suspect. They've played two poor games in a row in my eyes after three good ones. And I just think that it's times. This streak for Cincinnati's gone on forever. They're due to win a game, and something tells me they're going to do this. I hope the hell I'm wrong, but I've just felt that way all week.
Well, Tim was over for coordinator Thursday yesterday talking to Todd Haley, and he talked about the running situation. And after this, I mean, to that point, because both teams seem to be preaching patience and caution. That's not just from the Bengals side of it. Based on what Haley was saying yesterday, you led you to believe it's going to be a dink and dunk fest on their part. But here's his thoughts on Fitzgerald Toussaint. In the running game, as you said, guy, is a big question mark going into the weekend. Here's Todd Haley.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I think, you know, this year and last year are different from that standpoint. You know, last year we had a guy in Tree that knew what to do, but really some of those physical matchups were going to be an issue. We had a guy that hadn't been here and didn't understand protection, so it forced us a little bit into a corner on some of the things we were able to do on game day. So, you know, I think everybody feels a lot better that way, that, you know, we got a guy that's been around, smart, knows what's expected, understands protections, understands the runs, understands the language that we're using, and I think it shows. So I think everybody has a pretty good comfort level that way.
All right, do you believe him? Are they really comfortable in Fitz Toussaint?
As much as you believe that the Bengals are going to try to ground and pound the Steelers into submission.
But I mean, what are they going to say? They're not going to say, and they can compare it to last year and pretend they have a leg up because this guy's been with the team all year. And I think there is something to that, even in what we saw last week and the fact that the guy knows his assignments and isn't going to come in. I don't think he's going to make the critical mistake that kills you, but I don't think he's going to be much of an offensive help. I just don't. What's his reputation for catching the ball, Tim? Do you know? You've been over there
okay.
More than I have this week. Yeah.
Okay.
I got to pull up his numbers from Michigan. I'm sure he ran the ball. That Michigan, when I think of them, at least they were more traditional.
Michigan always liked to throw. Yeah, Michigan always liked to throw at the back. I mean, they always had backs that catch the ball a lot. Like Chris Perry caught the ball a lot there at Michigan. Jamie Morris, if I recall, caught the ball quite a bit at Michigan.
His career best, though, was 3 catches in a game against Michigan State.
Mm.
So that's not electric from that side of it.
Yeah, but he described himself as electrifying. Did you hear this?
No, I didn't.
I can be very electrifying, and like I said before, a very disciplined guy.
I'm electrifying and disciplined.
I like that.
And humble, apparently, too. That's when I asked him, I said, Mike Tomlin mentioned during his press conference that Steeler fans are going to love you when they see you. Why are they going to love you? I'm electrifying.
And disciplined.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's been what, I mean, Tomlin was saying that all week. You know, this guy's a blue-collar, hard worker. You know, we trust him. That's what Haley was saying. We haven't seen the electrifying part. We saw 12 carries for 24 yards.
I'd like to have seen one 9-yard run last week when he got in the game. Something.
Yep.
You know, there was nothing. But he averaged 2 yards a carry.
No, we saw solid pass protection, which
maybe
that's good enough.
Well, maybe it is.
If they're just going to play conservative. In the Cabali story today, he went to the Pro Football Focus well. So I know
Did
this
he?
Was the paying mark to do so. Well,
wow,
not for the
must
grades.
Must have been desperate.
It wasn't for grades of players. He went for trends. Mark admits that he likes to do that sometimes. Cincinnati is only allowing opposing quarterbacks, when they throw it over 20 yards, 27% completion. 10 of their 12 interceptions on the year came on passes down the field of 20 yards or longer. So that's pretty significant. And I think a couple Reggie Nelson picks were on deep balls, right, where Ben tried to go deep. So is Haley right when he says, and I'll pull the quote up from him here, that they need chunk plays, but chunk plays are not big plays. They need 15 to 20-yard type plays. That's what he was hinting at, middle of the field.
Ben earlier in the week defended, he said if you're going to be he used the word gunslinger, and you're going to gamble and throw deep on third down, you're going to have some interceptions. That's the way we play. Almost defending the turnover question that's come up with him. And I think that you can't ignore, and I think too many people from a Pittsburgh perspective are looking at when they played this last time. And you can't ignore the shock of losing At the time, Andy Dalton was the highest rated passer in the game. He played nine plays. Eifert was leading the NFL in touchdown catches. He played nine plays. Both of those guys are out after your first drive. You also emotionally are screwed up because the Steelers are under your skin. You beat them once, and you think this is the time you're finally going to sweep them, toss them to the ground, and clinch. And it's like a cold bucket of water being dumped on your head right in the middle of the game. You throw a kid in who's inexperienced, who was not they didn't have worked the game plan around him during the week, and maybe most important, you're without Pac-Man Jones, who may be an idiot, but is a hell of a football player.
Having a really good year.
So now all of those things are back on the table for this game. Pac-Man Jones is playing. Eifert's playing. And the kid has played better at quarterback in the weeks since the Steelers have played him. It's not going to be a complete, oh, crap, here we go feeling. And I think they'll be more disciplined and under control. I think part of the game got away from that way. So you even all those things up, everybody knows that the Bengals' defense is better than the Steelers' defense, and their running game is better than the Steelers. The only thing you can bank on to me is your quarterback is better, and here's a guy that's thrown seven picks his last four games. That doesn't give me confidence.
Yeah, and the thing about the Roethlisberger picks and saying it's about who we are, it's our identity, we throw the ball down the field, that's not where all the picks have been coming from lately.
No. You know, I mean,
it was a slant to Antonio Brown last week. It was, one that got called back, but that they were on the two.
Yeah, chunk play can turn into a turnover too.
So it's not just the deep down the field shots that Ben is using as an explanation for why the ball is being intercepted. The Cleveland game last week is trying to force a slant to Brown, and it got intercepted by the linebacker. That wasn't down the field. The play that got intercepted and brought back for the touchdown and called back on the offside, that was right at the goal line. That wasn't a chunk play. These are little throws that he's making, or 10-yard passes, 12-yard passes that are being intercepted. It's not like it was against Seattle or even the one against New England late in the game where he was just hucking the ball down the field to try to get a big chunk. And if it gets intercepted, oh, well, it gets intercepted. No, these were like early down and distance sequence situations.
How about these numbers against the Bengals this year from Roethlisberger, according to Cabali? When he throws deep, 1 of 11 for 31 yards, no touchdowns, and one pick on throws of 20 yards or longer down the field. That doesn't sound like a good recipe for
chunk
plays. Let's try it again. Yeah, for big chunk plays. Yet again, there's a conflict here because Roethlisberger is a quarterback's coach, Randy Feitner. Chris Adamski just tweets this out. He's a gunslinger. You have to let him play. Okay. Then you got Haley saying yesterday he doesn't want him to, he's got to be patient. He doesn't want turnovers, and we don't need 80-yard plays. We want 15 to 20-yard plays. I think they're conflicted within the own team as to what they want from Roethlisberger.
I think you're right, and I think that's part of the problem. I think that's what they've run into here in the past couple weeks. And the absence of Martavis Bryant's production should pinch their desire to go deep as often as they have.
I didn't even throw that in there. I don't think it's healthy that the guys are being called out in the press, even if they're okay with it and he's saying it's a wake-up call and they seem happy. That's not a good sign going into a playoff game.
What's interesting is Steve Young was on PTI yesterday, Guy, and he said he loved it. I was surprised to hear him say that because they asked him what he thought of Ben calling him out. But he took it more from, he said he liked the way Martavis responded to the question.
Yeah.
He thought it was a sign to him that it's a good, healthy relationship and there's depth in the locker room. I mean, he doesn't know. He's not been in there.
Right.
He's got to judge on that. But I'm with you. I don't think that's a real good sign. You might spin it to, Ben's a good leader, but why is that good news if you've got to call a guy out going into the playoffs? I guess it's good news if Martavis does have a thick skin, but other than that, that's not a good symptom to me. But my question would be, and I threw this out on Twitter, do you want Gunslinger Ben or do you want Dink Dunk Ben?
Dink Dunk Ben.
So boring Ben is what we want this week. Just check it down to Fitzgerald Tucson. Take what you can get.
If you're getting 100 yards from Heath Miller before he even steps on the field, that's a good start. And when I say dink and dunk, if you do hit Antonio Brown in stride on a 5-yard pass, he can turn it into 15 pretty quickly. So I just don't want to see them challenging the secondary. This would be a good week to be conservative. This would be a good week for them to replicate what they did at the start of that Rams game before he got hurt in St. Louis.
I like it. What was the final in that game? 6-3 or 9-6?
Well, he got hurt, but remember, he moved them down the field, and I think one drive stalled, but they got a would they get a field goal and a touchdown before he got hurt or something, or two touchdowns? They missed both extra points. I don't remember. But
yeah, 12-6 was the final.
12-6 was the final. But they were moving the ball, and then it just sort of died.
Yeah. For a playoff game, I think, you know, if they have to go gunslinger later, if they fall behind or they need it, at least they know they have the potential to do it, but it's risky. I think you've got to be kind of – I wouldn't be surprised if it's scoreless after the first quarter.
Mm. Well, to that point, Tim, if you think, you know, Foles, is A.J. McCarron A.J. McCarron? Maybe that is the game plan. We'll be boring. We'll let their quarterback blow the game for us. You know, we'll wait until he melts down at some point in this contest.
I don't know if he's going to melt down, but if they're going to fail to attack the Steelers' secondary, as you've been hearing, as I've been hearing, then I think they are doing themselves a disservice. If you don't go after the weakest spot of your opposition, then you're just not trying hard enough. You're just not going about it the right way. You know, Luke Skywalker knew where to shoot the torpedoes into the Death Star. And the soft spot on this Death Star for the Steeler defense, you shoot the torpedoes at Antoine Blake. And I don't care if it's first down, second down, whatever. That's where you attack.
Yeah.
It still says, by the way, 100% chance of rain. That has not changed all week. Rainfall near a half an inch
wow.
in Cincinnati on Saturday night.
So that game will be a driving rain. The Minnesota game is sub-zero temperatures as
yeah.
a high.
Winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. You get up near 20, that starts getting significant too.
Oh, man, this will be a good football weekend. Sit back on the couch and enjoy it.
One thing that you brought up, Ken, about the run game, I was talking to Pursuta about this a little bit yesterday over at the South Side, and he was, you know, he always does like a breakdown the tape of the opposition segment for Steelers.com. And he said against Baltimore, what they were doing is they were bringing in an extra lineman. They were going seven linemen straight across, putting a fullback in, and running with Hill a lot against Baltimore, which suggests that what Jeff Hobson was talking about with us is accurate, and they must have liked the look because they were just letting the fullback take away one guy, letting the extra offensive lineman in theory take away another guy, and letting Hill pick whatever hole he wanted to go into. And what it did was it created a real it made it harder to get any backside pursuit because they stretched out the offensive line for so far with all the offensive linemen. So you couldn't track them down from the outside, and you had blockers in front of them if you wanted to go behind the fullback, you had an extra guy to pick, and it was hard for the Ravens to defend that run, and they think that they stumbled onto something there perhaps. That could be why they're talking so much about pounding the Steelers with the run game. Hmm. And look, I don't think the Steelers are immune to being hurt by the run. I think teams would have much more success running the ball against the Steelers if they wanted to do it more often, but the pass is so obviously there, people don't bother.
Has anybody this year stuck with the run against them?
Maybe Kansas
Baltimore
City,
in the first game?
Baltimore with, what's his name, Forsett, the first game, that's for sure, yes.
Yeah, okay, so those were the two. And you're right, they got hurt by that a little bit. It wasn't, like, devastating, but...
But other teams are like, why bother? We can just throw the ball.
All right, here's some early responses to Gunslinger Ben versus Dink Dunk Ben. Blue Acid tweets in, I want the dink and dunk. Gunslinger Ben can make it happen, but also he throws pick sixes for a loss in the wild card game against the division rivals, so you got to play it safe. That goes directly against Jonathan and Albert, who want Gunslinger Ben. Jonathan says, sling it. You got to play aggressive and hopefully with a lead. Albert says, the only way they can win is if Ben is Gunslinger Ben. So already I'm three tweets in here, and I think the fan base is split on this.
You know what gunslinger I want? I want Gunslinger Butler. I want Keith Butler to be a gunslinger.
I agree with that.
I want him to go after the quarterback. I think he talked a little bit about blitzing here, Ken, if you want to hear that clip.
Absolutely.
We are not going to blitz at all. Well, we'll see. You know, when we get to the game, we're an aggressive team. That's probably what we do best. But, you know, in terms of whether we're going to blitz or not, they'll find that out when we get there. You know, they know us well enough, and we know them well enough, and I'm sure they've probably seen every blitz we've got. So it's not going to be new for them. It's not going to be new for us, all the formations they give us and all that stuff. So we're just going to – it's going to come down to the guys who who hold on to the ball the best and who get the most turnovers. The turnover takeaway ratio is going to be key in this game, as it is in most games. So for us, we need to get some turnovers.
So try to force the ball back into your hands then. You know, this talk about, you just hear it when you listen a little bit deeper to the soundbite. And they've seen everything that we have. Not every blitz has to be a surprise. You blitz and you make the offensive linemen and the blockers occupy a certain amount of guys. It doesn't have to be stunning where it comes from. You know, you just have to create movement and holes for the defensive backs and the linebackers to get through to get to the quarterback, right?
Right.
So you don't have to out-scheme them with every blitz. You just need to get there and finish the play in the backfield.
Sometimes just the threat of a blitz and you do come will make a quarterback wet his pants, as young as A.J. McCarron, right? I mean, just, hey, he might know it's coming, but he still might not know where the best place to go with the ball is. On his Steelers Nation radio show this week, Butler said this, guy, quote, "I think I learned I got to be a more aggressive defensive caller than I was against Baltimore," end quote.
No shit.
You know, a lot of what you do as a coordinator, the more gambles you take, it's to mask weaknesses, and there are weaknesses on this defense. You can be, I think you can always be conservative when you're more talented.
Jeff tweets in, "I want whatever Roethlisberger it takes to win this game. We don't know what kind of defense Cincy is playing until you see it on the field this weekend." I suppose that's true.
Yeah, adjustments will be everything. That. I mean, you don't know. I mean, this. What's the over-under for this game? I mean, I expect this to be low scoring.
46, I think it was.
So if you get an early lead, I don't want Gunslinger Ben out there trying to add to it. If you're behind, you might have to. I think a lot of it depends on how it starts, how much is the weather really affecting the play. And I hate to keep harping on this, but when you're talking about 100% chance of rain with winds up to 20 miles an hour, that's a factor. That's not a shower.
Joe tweets in, "You're going to have to do both gunsling and dink and dunk when you have no running game. Short throws to Brown and Miller will move the chains as your run game alternative. Then you hit a couple deep balls."
Right.
You agree with that, Tim? I mean, lots of Brown and Miller in the screen game?
Yeah, I want to see a lot of Heath Miller. I think you are going to see a lot of Heath Miller. I think they're going to give you Heath Miller because they've found that that's at least once been a recipe for success. I can't really say about the second time if that, you know, I don't think they thought about Miller's impact in that second game as much as they did the first game. And then they still got it to Miller a bunch in the second game anyway. So, I think if you're going to try to loosen them up with short stuff underneath, you've got to count on Brian hitting one home run for you.
Now, TM says with D'Angelo Williams ruled out, Ben's going to have to sling it, and that has been kind of officially reported by Ian Rappaport anyway, if you believe in him. According to the rap sheet about an hour ago, the Steelers considered D'Angelo out with the foot, sources say, and if they win, there's a chance he would play next week in Denver. I don't know if you guys – I mean, Rappaport's been wrong a few times, but for the most part, the guy's got some good intel. And there's no reason to think that's not true, right? I mean, D'Angelo didn't practice yesterday and looks like he's definitely out.
Other than that, he was walking around without a boot, which is encouraging, but there's a difference in that and taking the pounding to the foot. I mean, I wondered from the time the schedule came out, would an extra day have helped at all with him or Dalton? Maybe not, but if this game were the late game Sunday afternoon with almost 24 more hours, would that have made a difference? But, they've been playing. Both teams have said all week they're preparing as if both Dalton and Williams are missing. And so, that I don't think that's any surprise.
It's the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James Trib Live Radio Morning Show. Guy Junker, Tim Benz, Ken Laird. Send us your emails at sportstalk@tribweb.com, talking Steelers and Bengals. Sean is in this morning, and he brings up an interesting question. I haven't seen this, but he says, "I just read that the NFL is using the same officiating crew, guys, for this game that ref the Week 14 matchup. Do you know if that's true? And if so, why on earth would they use the same crew that mangled that mess?"
I haven't seen that, but if they did that, it's stupid. But it's also the NFL, who should have won Jagoff of the Year, but no, had to campaign for Johnny or for Billy Football at the end there. Our live in the moment audience, blonde wig, sunglasses, stupid name, not paying on a credit card, all that stuff. Yeah, it's funny, but this is the NFL in action here.
Well, we don't know if it's true 100% yet, but I would say that's stunning if that's actually the case. I guess on one hand, Jet Guy, they could justify it and say this crew knows what they're dealing
with. What to look
right?
for.
They, Yeah, they've been here before.
Yeah, they missed it the first time. Maybe they'll see it the second time.
Fool me once, fool me twice, that sort of thing. Mike in Jacksonville says, Tim, the name of the restaurant is the Montgomery Inn.
That's
the one
it.
We're trying to think of.
Right? Yes, no, I think that's pretty good. I think that lives up to its rep better than the chili.
That's what I'm saying. You swap the ribs for the – and I think they've done that before.
Yeah.
If I remember right, another one of these dumb mayoral bets, they've done that.
Ryan is agreeing with Guy. He is picking the Bengals to win this weekend. You got to pick the Bengals because of D'Angelo. You hope Tomlin dresses him and breaks the glass if he needs to, as opposed to dressing 17 linebackers just because Jarvis Jones sucks and Shazier gets an ouchie on every other play. But I would say Cincinnati with a high probability of a quote-unquote upset in this game, guys. P.S. looked up Ronda Rousey's body paint pictures, and they're pretty good. That's your Ryan intel on the Rousey, which Tim looked at too. Don't deny it, Benz.
Oh, I did look it up. They look fine. I just, like I said, with all the press she's doing now, what would she have done if she had won? I mean, how much more could she do? This is what she does when she loses. What happens when she wins?
It's not about how hard you hit, right, Tim?
Yeah, all the Rockies.
You get hit.
All the Rockies were on last night. They ran them all right in a row.
Bart says, come on, guy, you're doom and gloom this morning. The Steelers overcame the bomb and touchdown to Green and gained back momentum in that game. The Bengals will run the ball to set up the pass. If the Steelers stop the run, they win this contest. Obviously, Bart is liking Pittsburgh.
What's my record against the spread this year?
Yeah, that's scary. You are 51-28 against the spread. That is really sick. You got a 5-game lead with 11 games to play.
You're going to give that team points at home? I'm going by what happened the last 2 weeks, and they put shit out there.
Yeah, you're picking them to win outright, right? Forget about the spread.
Yeah.
God, you don't even need the points. Lou says, Ben reminds me of Brett Favre, guys. I did check AccuWeather. He said maybe not as bad as rain-wise, but the wind gusts, I think, could be a factor. 12 to 18 miles an hour and pretty cold, although not snow cold.
40s at game time. 41, according to this.
And Lou says it is the same refs as the last Steelers.
Yeah, it is.
Bengals
I just looked it up. It's John Perry's crew. Here, it's fascinating that Perry will get another crack at Steelers-Bengals after struggling to control the chippiness and emotion in the Week 14 matchup. He called a total of 11 penalties in that game, well below the league average for all games. And not surprisingly, Perry's crew finished the season on the low end in behavior penalties. Personal fouls, roughing the passer, taunting, unnecessary roughness, and unsportsmanlike conduct. It combined for 22 such calls, tied for fourth lowest in the league. You wonder if he'll need to be more aggressive to keep the rematch under control. I ask you.
You think?
If ESPN.com, and let me give the author proper credit here, Kevin Seifert, if they can figure this shit out, and they have these numbers and this history at their fingertips, shouldn't the friggin' league?
It's kind of stunning to me, actually, that they're going to let this happen. Now, you know, Tomlin and Marvin Lewis are both downplaying that part of it. Maybe their players won't be as obnoxious. But
Or if you want to be really conspiratorial about this, and I like being really conspiratorial about things, maybe this is exactly what the NFL wants. They want primetime, trash talk, nasty, dirty.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that emotion, that hate fueled.
We sell hate, like Colin Campbell said or whatever.
Yeah,
Colin Campbell.
Two legendary playoff games between the Steelers and the Ravens, and they see this being the next chapter.
Carlos tweets in, I don't care about Gunslinger Ben or Dink Dunk Ben. I want Smart Ben, the one who throws deep balls when it's suitable. Pat says I'd prefer the no interception Ben. That's an obviously. So I think you can see some of the responses here. What we're getting, like, you don't. This has been the story since Todd Haley came, right, guy? They wanted to take away the picks. They wanted to protect him a little bit, and the sacks. But they wanted to, you know, not eliminate him from being who he is. And it's, I think, in some of these games they really have gotten away from it of late. But they've been so emboldened by a great offense for the most part of the year. I think it's tough to put the reins on Ben when he's going so well. Maybe they've been properly humbled these last 2 weeks. That'd be the best way I could spin it. Maybe learn
yeah,
a lesson.
Maybe, but I also think that he is their major advantage. He is the he's the reason a lot of people think the Steelers can win this game. They have, you know, if Andy Dalton is healthy for this game, I really think they're going to lose. But I just think that if that's your best weapon, if that then how do you dink and dunk them all night? You're playing right into their hands. He's the one guy that can beat them. But like I said, I think you start off conservative and see what happens. Maybe McCarron makes an early mistake. You jump up 7-0 after a turnover, or anything can happen, and you adjust as you go. You don't have your fourth quarter planned on Thursday. But there's a lot to be said about that. I mean, that's the best way. It's funny to me how Ben is so good at prolonging plays. I mean, he's the best quarterback in the league at keeping a play going and improvising, and is usually pretty good at that. And yet, at times, when he has time, just it's like he has blinders on and throws balls that you're like, you know what I mean? I think he's – of course, there are other quarterbacks like this, too. I almost think he's better when he's a little bit pressured than when he's perfectly flat-footed and standing there with time.
Hmm. Well, I'm sure he'll be somewhat pressured this week. I mean, the Bengals are not a – I don't say they're a great pass rush, but they're pretty good. You know, they're going to put some heat on him. Geno Atkins hasn't been as good as I thought he would be at the start of the season maybe in some of these games, but it just takes him, you know, one hit of Ben in a game like this to really switch it all up. A couple more tweets here. This one from Stairway to Seven. I want Gunslinger Ben. Yopo. You only play once. Okay, but you could also only play once and lose the game.
Play three stress. Times.
Yeah, yeah.
If they play four times, Reggie Nelson would wind up in
Canton. The goal here is to play more than once.
That's a flawed strategy, Stairway. I guess based on recent history, they have only played once, so maybe that's what he's been thinking of. But we got a lot. We got quite a few people weighing in on the matriculate the ball down the field. D'Angelo Reggie Nelson is the strength of this Bengals team. You don't test him, so I think there's quite a few reasonable Steelers fans that want to be careful this week. And obviously, at the bottom line, fans want to win this game. I'm trying to look up who that ref crew was in the first. Did you say the name of the ref?
John Perry.
Oh, John Perry. Okay.
In fact, Ken, I'm tweeting it out right now for people who want to read it. Kevin Seifert wrote the story. Go to my Twitter timeline at Ben's Trib Live 970, and I just put a link up there. Boom, there it is. That's what you heard me feverishly typing in the background.
Now, Guy, if I'm not mistaken, after that game, you would have preferred they had ejected Burfict before the game even started for the stuff at the 50-yard line.
I thought that's what you were supposed to do.
Even for the two guys throwing punches, slapping at each other, even though that was Antonio Brown, I just think that's how, as an official, you get control of the game. You don't, the two guys in the first, after you've already had the pregame altercation, you've got two guys swinging at each other that you just, you know, offsetting penalties. Well, I mean, that's the easiest out in sports.
Okay, but that was Dre Kirkpatrick and Antonio Brown, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
that's
it was.
That's a loss for Pittsburgh if they throw both.
There
of those
is.
Guys
well,
out.
I'm not looking at this from a Steeler. I'm talking about if you're grading officials that let a game get away, and they did, that's where it happened in the first 5 to 10 minutes. If you're a player and you're allowed to start a fight before the game, and you're allowed to openly slap a guy on the side of the head after a play, well, then all hold to that, and then that's what you get the rest of the day. What you got?
Okay, so let's say there's a beef at the 50-yard line. Does John Perry have the stones in this game at 8:15?
Before the game?
Before the game, to not only throw a flag, but to eject somebody.
Well, if he didn't in the regular season, I say he doesn't now either.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's not happening. But again, Tim, to your conspiratory theory, I like it. I think it's what the NFL wants. I just came out of the concussion movie last night. I finally got around to seeing it, Guy.
You like it?
And I liked it. I thought the guy who played Goodell was pretty bad. He was not very believable.
Luke Wilson?
Yeah, Luke Wilson. I kept thinking of him in that scene from Anchorman where he was in the brawl with
yeah.
the three news teams.
With the trident.
Yeah.
I like the guy played Tagliabue. He looked like him.
He was good. I thought
that guy didn't
Cyril
have a big
Weck
part,
was good.
Though.
No, he didn't have a big part. No, I liked it. I mean, I think it's worth seeing, but it's funny how the NFL is portrayed in that movie.
Has Maroon talked yet about himself? A lot of people have spoken on his behalf saying that the movie cheesed him over, but I haven't heard him speak yet. Has he?
I have not.
Because he's portrayed as the main roadblock, right?
Well, he's in the movie, guy, you saw it as well. He's like, he doesn't come out and say anything quote-wise, but he's definitely like, they portray him as
he's a company doctor, there's no question.
Yeah, silent company wall or something.
But he kind of, I think they kind of, when they met in up in the Mount Washington restaurant, wherever that was supposed to be, how they got an entire room at the Lamont to themselves or wherever they were is beyond me, with the incline going up and down in the background.
You got to know people, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
Thomas Tull.
But I think they actually, and he was poor. You know, every movie has to have a villain. You know, Art Howe hated the way he was portrayed in Moneyball, too.
I just don't think he liked being portrayed by a fatty like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well, yeah, and he wasn't. Art Howe was a guy that was like, he was like Bill Verdon, man.
Yeah.
He still wouldn't mess with him well into his 50s.
Philip Seymour Hoffman had foops, but...
But I think they had him at least won over or listening when he left the restaurant that night.
This was a post from March of last year before the movie came out, but they were quoting Dr. Maroon. This must have been like past quotes where he said... he thinks the long-term neurological damage football players suffered is being over-exaggerated. Quote, the rule changes, the safer tackling techniques, the medical management of concussions is so much better than it has ever been in the history of the sport. Talks about Mike Webster. Mike was one of the hardest players in the history of sport. Obviously, he had many traumatic episodes through his head. So I guess he's sort of pointing at maybe it's an exception, not the rule. This movie, though, threw out some stats. Didn't they, guy? Like, they expect 28% of players that play to have some
CTE,
kind of...
CTE, right. And the thing about it is, this isn't, you know, the discovery of the repeated head blows leading to something down the road may be new, but Teddy Roosevelt practically banned college football back at the turn of the 20th century because players were dying on the field. Actually was going to ban the sport. So, I mean, the idea that that head injuries from playing football is something new is ridiculous. It's over 100 years old.
Guy, you said you liked it more than you expected, right?
The movie?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I want to know what parts are actually true and which one's Hollywood licensed. That's my only problem. It's too much fiction mixed in with fact with people that I know. So, but yeah, it was an enjoyable watch.
What'd you think, Ken? Was it my concern the whole time is basically it's a cheesy remake of The Insider. Is that what it was? Did you see The Insider?
I didn't see The Insider. No. I think they portray the NFL game. They do a good job of at least giving it its props in terms of its beauty and its majesty. It's not a total slam job on football. There's so much Pittsburgh in it. Guy's right about that. If you're from the city, this just the scenes of Pittsburgh and the
Allegheny
Pittsburgh
County
people.
Morgue.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, Bradshaw talking at the beginning of the movie, and you know, just you have to see it. I think from that point of view, the stuff that was exaggerated, I guess, and pretty significantly, was Bennett Omalu's role in
discovering it.
Quote, unquote. I mean, he definitely connected it to football, I guess, but, you know, they had done studies, I guess, and it had a name since the 50s back with boxers, according to the Washington Post.
So. Yeah,
yeah, and the story is he has let that slide, too. He likes the fact that now people think he discovered it when he really didn't.
Now, this story I'm seeing...
I mean, the Will Smith acting in it is noteworthy. I mean, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, Omalu said when he closes his eyes and listens to him, he thinks he's listening to himself.
Still prefer if you would have done the Independence Day remake, but that's just me.
But anyway, here we're talking about Bengals Steelers, a bloodbath Saturday night. They put the same refs out that they refed the first game, who did a poor job of legislating it. And oh, by the way, the concussion movie's out, and we're all looking forward to it.
So NFL.
It really is beautiful.
Oh, God.
In this story, researchers found 76 of the 79 brains they looked at had CTE associated with it, brains of former NFL players. This was a study last year by the nation's largest brain bank. 76 out of 79 is not 28%.
I want to know who the 79 NFL players are that died that donated their brains.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I haven't heard of 79 players doing that.
Well, that was a part of the movie, of course, like at first.
Well, even like Frank Gifford, like Frank, when he died. I mean, you don't think of him as an NFL player now after all these years, but they donated his brain. There's one. I mean, it doesn't, you know, so I think a lot of people, I mean, it could have been guys that played in the 50s. I think their families now, because of all this, are starting to.
Yeah.
Because
they want to know the
answer. That's part of the movie when they were trying to prove it. He says, well, I got to wait 50 years for all these NFL players to die to prove my point. And,
well,
and then the real thing with Dave Duerson and the meeting on the street where he was, you know, pleading for, who was it?
It was Andre Waters.
Andre Waters pleading for some kind of help.
But to your point, though, Guy, if they're playing in the 50s and they died in 2013 or 2012 or whenever Ken Study was, you know, you can die with CTE, but did it affect you? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, my dad always says this about cancer research is way more men are going to die with some form of cancer than aren't, but, you know, just, you know, it could be a couple cells, or, you know, it could have started, but you've died with it, or it never manifested. You're 96 and you died of something else, but you might have some form of cancer in your body somewhere along the way, you know, prostate or something like that. And it didn't affect your life. Maybe CTE didn't affect the lives of some of these people that actually had it, but you know, something else killed them, that heart attack or that liver failure, something.
Yeah, it depends how old they were. If they, like the guy says in the movie, this guy was 50. He died of a heart attack. That's not normal. There are other reasons that drove him to that, and all the, you know, like the drug use. But like if somebody in your family, Tim, died and they had played football for a lot of years, and they came to you and said, "Will you donate the brain for study?" I imagine in the last 10 years with all this hubbub, you probably would, right? You'd want to know what your loved one was going through, and whether it was related to the sport they played. I mean, I don't know that, but 70, if 79 brains were donated, then
yeah, I'm just surprised the number is that high, because, you know, I hadn't heard of 79. I've heard of a lot, like Andre Waters and Dave Duerson and Junior Seau and Mike Webster, you know, guys like Justin Strelzik, but 79 just seemed like a high number to me for guys that donated their brains in recent years, dead NFL players.
Right. Now, the movie is not doing well at the box office, at least it wasn't per last look. I think it was.
No, it opened 7th. In the nation.
Yeah, did like 10 million.
That's a stupid opening up over Christmas weekend.
I agree. I'm sure the NFL loves that, you know, that's the way it's gone. But it's, you know, I can see why people wouldn't want to see it in a way. It doesn't sound like a very fun movie, but Guy, did you, I don't know if you came out of there. I thought it was highly entertaining, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I did too. And I don't know if I. If I didn't know Mike Webster and didn't know Justin Strelzik, and it wasn't so Pittsburgh-based, if I'd have been that interested in it. Especially, Tim's right, this might have been a great spring release. You got the NFL playoffs going on. Now, most people that are probably interested in this are football fans, and at the moment, they're interested in watching the playoffs and the stretch drive of the NFL season, not going to see a movie that sort of tears at the game that they love.
Yeah, I don't know. If they wanted to capitalize on football being forefront for everybody's mind, maybe you do it now, kind of like give people a chance to see Star Wars 2 or 3 times before they decide to go see another movie, but to release it basically for what amounted to a second opening weekend for Star Wars was just dumb.
You should have put it out NFC Championship weekend, AFC-NFC, like that Saturday, everybody's off, there's no football for the first time in a long time. People would have gone at that point.
I don't know if that screws around with the awards, though. Maybe they needed to release it before a certain date for the Oscars the Golden Globes or something like that.
How did your wife's interviews go about nutrition?
Pretty well, but it prevented me from being all that involved with Coordinator Thursday because I kind of hung out in the locker room and made sure she was talking to the right people.
Was she a treated?
Well, I didn't want her to walk up to interview some guy who was going to be cut before the next playoff game for an article that's going to run in March. You know what I mean?
She was prepared for what the Steelers locker room brings in all its forms.
Yes,
you embraced her.
Nobody cares what Jacoby Jones eats.
There you go, exactly. We all care what Martavis Bryant is eating at midnight for munchies, but that's about it.
It's Doritos.
Everybody hates spinach. That's what she came away saying. Everybody was bitching about spinach. They all hate spinach. I love spinach.
I love spinach, too.
Ken?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you probably eat spinach 4 times a day.
Not as a kid, I didn't, but I do now.
It's excellent. Sauté a little spinach? Mmm. Two football notes. Peyton Manning was officially named the starter for Denver. That came.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised.
It came pretty quick after what the coach was saying. There was no hurry, and then all of a sudden, there was a hurry. And Peyton has been named the starter. What's weird is Osweiler's a free agent at the end of the year out there, too. So, and Peyton is mulling retirement, right? So this could be the end of the line for both of those two in Denver, depending how it goes. Maybe at noon today, we'll pick our Super Bowl teams before the playoffs start. I am tempted to pick Denver, actually. I don't know who to pick in the AFC.
I'm still picking New England.
Every time I'm tempted to pick Denver, I think of Peyton Manning's playoff record, and I think, why would you be an idiot and pick – it's like picking San Jose to win
right,
the
there are
NHL
so many
Cup
times,
finals.
So many times where Peyton Manning has been in a better situation than he is now, and he's let you down. So why would you pick him now?
Right. Why would this be the year? It's just the field looks – I mean, this is a wide-open field for them, and they've got home field because the Patriots blew it.
Yeah, then again, we said that about the Steelers in 2005, right?
That's true.
You know, we had picked them so many times. So many times they looked like the best team in the AFC, and they failed to get through. And then the one team, they're the sixth seed in the AFC with significant roadblocks in front of them, they got all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, strange things happen. And I got to say, I was a little surprised to see Alan Faneca make the top 15 in his first year of Hall of Fame selection.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised at that. I'm surprised that Kevin Green continues to hang on the list.
That top 15 thing, Dermoni Dawson made that top 15 a bunch before he made it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's not that big a deal.
Six first-team All-Pros in like his first 9 years or whatever it was. Jeez, oh man, you can't get any better.
My guess is you'll see him make that top 15 a few years before he gets in.
Well, who was the guy that made it last year, the offensive lineman that had...
Tinglehoff?
No. I'll have to look it up. But it was like he waited 5 to 10 years or something, and he was a slam dunk Pro Bowler. Which maybe Faneca will have to.
Waters. Shields. Will Shields, is that it?
Will Shields.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look at who made the list last year.
Tinglehoff couldn't even do a speech, could he?
Right. Didn't Tarkenton do it for him?
Yeah. Speaking of concussions and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like Will Shields, how many All Pros did he have?
Was unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, Faneca had 6.
I mean, 6 is good, but.
So what are you saying, Ken? You're surprised that Will
I'm surprised
Shields...
he made the cut to 15 already. But if you're saying he's going to hang around like Will Shields did for multiple years, anyway.
Yeah, I think that's probably what's going to happen. Like Bettis did. Yeah, Bettis made the top 15 a couple times before.
See, I've never liked the way. I think the NFL felt they had to catch up. When they opened Canton, 1960, 62. You know, Baseball Hall of Fame had been open for 30 years already, and the fact that you got to have a certain amount of guys. Some years there might just only be 2 or 3 guys. Why do you have to have a minimum of, what's the minimum, 7?
5, I thought, right?
That's too many.
I don't know, Guy. I mean, I think, like you said, there's so much catching up to do, and football's become so broad-based, and everybody knows the players so well that it's easier to get guys in now. There's more of a logjam.
Will Shields made it last year. A couple years ago, Larry Allen made it.
Was he a first ballot guy, Larry Allen?
I don't think so.
No, really?
Sixth.
Sixth? Wow. See, yeah, so Faneca makes the top 15. He might make the next cut. And then
he
hangs around for a while before.
We're talking about former players that don't look anything like themselves. Have you seen him in the last 12 months?
Yeah.
He looks like a basketball player.
I remember doing the show in Boston with Christian Fourier. I can't remember which Patriot it was that just had retired. And Fourier, so the first words to him, which way are you going to go? Are you going to go fat? You're going to go skinny? And that's just the language that spoke. How are you going to get fatter and just get, you know, Casey Hampton size? Or are you going to get skinny like Jeff Harding's and Alan Faneca? And we saw a lot of that when the 2005 guys came back. You know, Hampton kind of stayed the same, surprisingly.
Yeah,
I thought he
would be, you know.
He just didn't move all that much.
Walter Jones also made it in pretty quick. Tackle. Shields retired in 06, so he must have waited more than five years. Because he would have been up in, what, 2011, so he got in. Well, he waited 4 or 5 years.
The weird thing about the football parameters, you wind up, oh, it's a tough year. There's 3 other good receivers. You never have that in baseball. If there's 5 good pitchers,
right,
all 5 will get. And that's right. The thing that I don't like about the. I mean, you don't have to have a ceiling on the top either. Let it go. You know, if you have 11 guys you want to put. I mean, it's a game that has rosters of over 50 people, so you're going to have more than you do in baseball. Roughly twice as many in a year would make sense. I just don't like a limit in either direction.
You know, they were going to run into the same thing. They already are, to be honest with you, when it comes to quarterbacks and wide receivers, where the numbers are going to be so skewed like the homer numbers are for the steroid era.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to use numbers really as a gauge for receivers getting in career-wise. Touchdown catches, yardage. I mean, Jesus,
well, this is
Ben is already what? What is he? Sixth? Or where is he? Who did he just pass?
This year
he passed Montana.
Unitas, Montana.
But then you see one of the guys that he passed also after Unitas in Montana. It was Unitas, Montana, and then Kerry Collins.
Kerry Collins, right.
So, okay, doesn't that tell you right away that there's already some skewing in the numbers going on? Right? If Kerry Collins is in front of Montana and Unitas.
What actually, then the guys he's passed this year made me think about how great Unitas was, that he's still on that list near the top,
yeah,
and he played in the 1960s.
What about Philip Rivers, too? He's right behind Ben. So at some
yeah,
point
seriously.
We're gonna have, I mean, is he going to
his numbers always look good, and his team always fails.
Like Matt Ryan is going to have Hall of quote unquote Hall of Fame worthy numbers, and he's never going to have gone to a Super Bowl.
When the Steelers played the Chargers this year, was that the third game of the year?
Yeah,
the Chargers were 2-0, and Rivers had the best passer rating in the league at the time of the game.
Well, even Greg Rosenthal put out his season-ending quarterback list, who he thought his own personal rankings at NFL.com. Okay, and he didn't have Rivers that high, but he had him eighth best in the league. And, you know, it feels like San Diego was a mess this year. Now, maybe he was great beyond his offensive line, and he put up all these yards, and he was more impressive than we give him credit for. But if you were going to say, because I think you're right, guy, and Tim, the numbers get skewed. So you got to just go by year, how dominant were they in their league?
Well, that's why one of the first things I look at in football is how many all-pro teams were they on? Not just Pro Bowls, because a Pro Bowl even isn't, you know, two guys in front of you, one gets hurt and one goes to the Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden you get a Pro Bowl invitation. I want to know, to me, it's like first-team All-American. If you're a 6-, 7-, 8-, 9-time all-pro, you're a Hall of Famer.
But in this era,
first team all pro or second team all pro?
Who?
See, that gets. They have like
Faneca was
six
time first team.
No, but I mean, for a quarterback, it's going to be tough to be. You know, with Brady and Manning, if you're in the Brady Manning era, it's going to be awful tough for you to accumulate a lot of all pros if you're a quarterback.
That's true. But I mean, for me.
And Rodgers.
I'm talking about, you know, a guy like a guard that you don't have any statistics for. Or you're just trying to judge how good was he compared to the rest of the league.
Where did Rosenthal have Ben on those numbers?
And it's all, I think it's also fair or unfair. I mean, you look at how many times did he win. How many other players do you judge by how many Super Bowls they won? Quarterbacks get judged that way all the time. When was the last time you heard a center? Oh, he's won 5 Super Bowls.
You know. What's funny is, you know, when you look at Roethlisberger and his effectiveness, like we got in the argument with Jeff Hobson when he was on Ken, you know, talking about how did the Steelers really get to the Super Bowl. And I was like, oh, they threw it around all over the place. That's how they got to the Super Bowl in those playoff games. You look at the numbers. He threw for like 198, 202, and 275. But how do we remember those games? They came out throwing in the first half of each game and then ran the ball out afterwards, right?
Yeah, right.
And then
and
you look at the
playoff,
rush.
That's not even all pro related. Like you have all pro.
No. But
season,
I'm just saying perceptually versus statistically. Yeah. Because now if the Steelers win on Saturday, Ben is probably going to be 30 of 39 for 3-something and 3 touchdowns again.
Right.
But when he was most effective was 2005, and we think that was like the zenith of the Roethlisberger era with those 3 AFC playoff games in 05. These are dink numbers compared to what he throws for now, even though he was at his most effectiveness then. And even his rookie year in 2004, he barely would go over 200 yards. And you're thinking, wow, what a great quarterback we finally have in Pittsburgh.
Well, the stat, you know, John Steigerwald used to throw around was if a guy threw for over 300 yards, he probably lost. That's now pushed up to like 400.
But Ben especially was part of that. Like his 300 passing yard indicator was always a loss.
Yeah, because they were playing from behind if he threw that many.
Like 6 All-Pros is pretty impressive. That's, you know, now it's voted on by the media, so that could be, you know, skeptical. But if you were dominant for 6 years, I guess that's enough, right? That's the length of most players' primes. So, you know, so how many years do you need to be elite to be a Hall of Famer? Is it 5? Is it 6? Is it 7? Do you have to have so many? Like in baseball, you got to have basically 2,000 hits to even be considered these days. If you don't have 2,000 hits, you didn't play long enough. So there's kind of a baseline of stats to achieve. But for a guard, you can't do that in the NFL, right? It's just, I guess, number of games played.
Yeah.
But that sounds like Faneca should be a Hall of Famer.
Well, there's the other thing with Faneca, Ken. He missed one game in his career.
Right. Yeah.
So he missed one game. Because I think if you're more than 5 years, that shows that you're pretty dominant. If you're anywhere 6, that you know you dominated for a decade. Because there's always going to be a year or two where the team stinks, or you were injury riddled, or you know somebody else had a great year. I mean, you can't expect the guy to do it. But if you're above, you're 6 or above, that's pretty much a dominant decade in my mind.
I think that Bouchette should step out of the room when he's shilling for Fanica for the Hall of Fame and let Jerry DePaula do it after that famous interview. I think that's the route to go. I don't want some little rookie behind me.
Like Curtis Martin made one All-Pro team. But that doesn't mean Curtis Martin wasn't great, on the other hand, right? I don't think Ben's. Has Ben ever had an All-Pro?
How many did Bettis have? Bettis have any? One?
Bettis had two.
Two? All right.
Two All-Pros. So you can't just go by All-Pros. You can't just go by Pro Bowl.
Well,
you're
talking about skill position people. And when I made that statement, I was talking about linemen who, especially for other teams, I can't, you know, I hear Joe Thomas is great. I see him play two times a year.
Right.
You know, and the Browns stink so much, they're not on too many national telecasts that you're watching. So I'm going by reputation. That's why guys that play anybody can look up stats of quarterbacks and receivers and running backs and even defensive backs. When you talk about interceptions, interception returns, you know, but it's the linemen, especially to me, that's where I look first to see how many All-Pros they make, because that gives you a bit of an insight into how dominant they were at that position.
Yeah, but as much as I love Ed Bouchette, he's watching the Steelers. I trust him on Dermonti Dawson, but he's got a vote on the All-Pros, so how do I know what he thinks of Larry Allen's any good? Like, he might just vote Larry Allen every year.
Well, those guys take that very seriously, and usually they talk to guys in other cities to get some input. And it's a collaborative effort. I don't think too many of those guys sit there and, you know, I know guys that vote even in the polls and will call media friends in other cities for their thoughts.
Yeah. Ben has four Pro Bowls, Roethlisberger, plus those numbers. I mean, he's probably in already, right? Just the two Super Bowls plus the numbers, plus the, you know. But in any one year, he was never number one, right? He was never, because he played with Peyton and Brady, and they were perceived to be better. And Rodgers, and yeah, Breeze. Eli Manning often is put ahead of him. So that's going to be an interesting how fast Faneca gets in versus Ben Roethlisberger. And most people would say Roethlisberger was the much better player at his position. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. Most people, but he's more visible anyway. All right, there's some long-winded Alan Faneca in the top 15 of the Hall of Fame ballot. Give us your thoughts, though, on
all
these
issues.
He was
really good against the Bengals a lot. If you want to tie to the Bengals, he had some of his best games against the Bengals.
I do not think Kevin Green is a Hall of Famer, nor Tony Dungy, by the way.
A coach or a player for Dungy?
Well, definitely not as a player. Not even close.
T.O. is a first-year eligible this year. He'll probably get in, right?
Tony Dungy belongs in the People Hall of Fame. Great guy. I just don't see him as a Hall of Famer. Just because he was a bit of a pioneer, that's not enough for me.
He's got to sit on the same desk with Rodney Harrison every week. For that alone, he deserves to be inducted into Canton, Ohio.
All right, Rossi is coming up at 11. We can talk to Rossi about some of these issues. Also, Tim, you had a chance to listen to a Neil Walker interview yesterday, which had a couple interesting nuggets that were dropped. We'll talk a little bit of baseball. The Pirates also signed a new pitcher and dropped another one. So they continue to make some minor moves. We'll get a little Pens fix in as well. Some further reaction to All-Star games. Crosby left off it now that we've had a couple days to digest. Is it a big deal? But mostly it's a Steelers Friday, and we're talking Steelers and Bengals today. And our playoff coverage is brought to you by Goodrich & Geist. They are pursuing justice for real people online at goodrichandgeist.com. And Trip Live Radio, the entity, is brought to you by the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, Pittsburgh Magazine's face of financial guidance. Rob Rossi, Trip columnist, next to weigh in on all these issues.
Game faces every day at Goodrich & Geist, pursuing justice for real people, online at goodrichandgeist.com. Injured? Do you have a case? Call Goodrich & Geist at 412-766-1455. Goodrich & Geist, located at 3634 California Avenue in Pittsburgh's North Side. Goodrich & Geist, attorneys at law, online at goodrichandgeist.com. All playoff coverage brought to you by Goodrich & Geist, investing in the community with roots in Pittsburgh.
$5 for breakfast, $10 for lunch, $15 for dinner. You're eating, but you're not eating gourmet food for those prices. If you work for 30 years and then are retired for 30 years, you're going to need $10,900 a year just to eat at those prices. That's not factoring in inflation or taxes. That would be $327,000 just to eat in your retirement years without inflation. And another $327,000 to feed your spouse or significant other. In other words, if you're now questioning if you've saved enough to eat in retirement, call the financial advisors of the Spanos Group of Raymond James. 866-916-RETIRE to develop a written financial goal plan tailored to your resources and financial goals. Spanos Group, Pittsburgh Magazine's face of financial guidance. That number again, 866-916-RETIRE. Raymond James & Associates, Inc., member New York Stock Exchange, SIPC.